In the new book, we tell ourselves stories, Joan Didion and the American Dream Machine. New York Times film critic Alyssa Wilkinson examines Didion's influence through the lens of American myth-making. As a young girl, Didion was infatuated with John Wayne and his on-screen bravado and was fascinated by her California pioneer ancestry and infamous Donner Party. The mythos that preoccupied her early years continued to influence her work as a magazine writer and film critic in New York. Alyssa Wilkinson is a film critic at the New York Times and formerly a senior correspondent and critic at Vox. Again, her new book is We Tell Ourselves Stories, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Alyssa Wilkinson to the roundtable this morning. Alyssa Wilkinson, thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure to have you.
Thanks. It's a pleasure for me, too.
Very nice to have you on the program. What brought you to want to look at this aspect of Didion's life?
Oh, that's such a good question. I have always, of course, in my adulthood, have admired Didion's work as a writer and as a critic, like many writers, I think. She's obviously one of the great ones that we model ourselves after. But when I started thinking about what this book should be, I wanted to make sure that it was a fresh take on her work because there's so much writing about her. And when I started working on it, she was still alive, actually. So I had no idea, or, I hadn't guessed at the flood of books that was going to come when she passed away about a year after I started working on it. But, as a film critic, it made sense for me to think through this lens. And it actually all snapped into focus for me when I was reading an essay of hers that's not about the movies at all, but it was about the Dukakis campaign. And it's an essay called Insider Baseball. And she's following the campaign, and she's, all the journalists on the campaign are listening to the candidate, but she's listening to his handlers. And she's starting to see that it reminds her very much of the movie sets that she had spent time on, because she'd had a long, several decades career as a screenwriter in Hollywood at that point. So she sort of saw how American entertainment and American political culture were merging. And that, for me, made the arc of the book become apparent. And it turned out to be a book about how she was formed by Hollywood and then how she worked in Hollywood and then how ultimately she started writing as a political commentator through the lens of Hollywood, even when she was writing about political campaigns.
And not just through the lens of Hollywood, but the lens of myth making in Hollywood.
Yes.
Which
that's
is
right.
The fascinating aspect of this, I think.
Yeah, there's something very particular about Hollywood films that have been very tightly tied to myth-making and very much American myth-making. I mean, right from the start of the film business, studio leaders and government leaders often were working hands in hand or were very much talking to one another. And often the movie studios saw themselves as kind of the guardians of cultural memory and of morale. So, when you look at Hollywood history, you really can read it as a series of mythologies that are being spun often out of facts, but into kind of story arcs that were supposed to help us explain to ourselves who we are and why. And so we have Westerns, we have disaster films, we have action films. World War II has been the subject of so many films, we can't even count all of them. So
right.
I think, that was really appealing to me. And it was clearly very intriguing to Didion, too, because she's always writing about it in one way or another. Even in her early writing about California, she's writing about crime and about crime headlines. And she's talking about how people there are making sense of them through the lens of noir films from the era. So, yeah, it presented itself as a really great lens for her work and one that I hadn't seen anywhere. And I think it's created a lot of great conversations.
As you point out very quickly, the book is not a biography of Joan Didion, but it is a look at her. And as you say, through this lens. But this is a woman who understood Hollywood and understood Washington. And as those intersect, it's a really fascinating lens to look through.
Yeah, and I think it's one that a lot of people just aren't so aware of with her work. I mean, my experience over the last 5 years, as I've talked to people about the project and, you know, about the book and its angle, is that a lot of people think of Didion primarily as the writer of The White Album, maybe Goodbye to All That, her essay about leaving New York in the 60s, The Year of Magical Thinking, all of which are fantastic things and everyone should read them. But there's this whole body of work that she did as a screenwriter, as a film critic, which was kind of a discovery for me writing the book, and as a political, I would say a political critic, really, more than just a commentator. She's not so interested in policies. She's interested in the style of American campaigns and governance from about the 80s onwards. And all of that, I think, is, you know, really, she shines as kind of a media critic and a critic of American culture. So those two things tie together very tightly for her. And I think that history has really borne out how prescient that insight is. And she's not the only person of her generation to have pointed to that, but she does it in a way that is, I think, really canny and astute.
This subtitle of the book, Joan Didion and the American Dream Machine, talk a little bit about her version of the American Dream Machine.
Yeah, I mean, the American Dream Machine is a phrase that comes up sometimes with writers on Hollywood. I actually think I may have swiped it from the great film critic Jim Hoberman, who's written a bunch of books that are really good about the intersection of Hollywood and of American politics. But for Didion, I think the dream comes up a lot. She talks about the dream and the dreamers. And it's really this, I think, encapsulation for her of a certain aspect of the American psyche, you know, which is a need to kind of be optimistic, to always believe the great thing is on the horizon. For her, the mythology that really forms her is as a Sacramento native and a fifth generation Sacramento native, she had grown up with all these stories, as you said, of pioneers crossing the plains, leaving everything behind in the East and striking out for the West. One story that haunted her clearly, because it keeps coming up over and over throughout her work, is the story of the Donner Party, you know, and how that vision ended in tragedy. Their dream ended as a nightmare. And it's significant for her in part because her great, 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 great something grandmother actually was supposed to be with the Donner Party and just happened to peel off early on and miss that fateful winter where they, you know, horrible things happened and they died. And I think for Didion, it was very much like, you know, a fate. Had her grandmother stayed with this group, Didion herself never would have existed. So there's that feeling of like destiny and that feeling of something beautiful. And the movies are such a incredible encapsulation of that. We sit in a room, we watch these big pictures on the screen and they tell us these stories that we can live inside of. And that's where we form our dreams. And one person who really encapsulated that for her was John Wayne, of course, and hardly just Didion, but certainly Didion. And he is the embodiment of a lot of that Western mythology for her. She really, really, really loves him and writes about seeing him when she was very, very young on a movie screen. I think, you know, that's a figure that for her represented something essentially American that she was attracted to as a young person.
And that sets the stage, right? I mean, an outsider observing reality and looking at and watching actors that are so larger than life and what they ultimately bring to us.
Right. You know, and they're beautiful or they're strong or their characters are, you know, the kinds of people that we aspire to be or that we aspire, you know, maybe we don't aspire to be them, but we kind of envy them. So all of those things are really important. And of course, that for Didion is a really great thing when we're talking about the movies. But when we transfer that to thinking, you know, about politics, she genuinely thinks that the problem is that we've lost the plot a bit and taken the show business part of Hollywood and of the America of that dream and pushed it into of an arena that really should be about, you know, governing and common good and trying to do the best thing for the greatest number of people, rather than making up stories to make ourselves feel better. And that's where she sees that crossover to be problematic.
While we wander around often looking up and down and say, how did we get here? How did we get to this place? It seems in my reading of the book and of about Didion that she sort of saw this coming.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's fun to, well, fun might not be the right word, but it's really illuminating to read her political writing, because she started writing, you know, seriously about politics in the 80s for the New York Review of Books, right around the time that she and her husband moved back to New York City, where she lived until she died. And the, you know, she writes about Ronald Reagan, who she really doesn't like at all. And he's a California Republican like her, but she just sees him as the embodiment of this Hollywood entertainment culture seeping into politics, which, of course, he was, in fact, an actor, and talked a lot about how he saw Hollywood and politics verging on one another. And but then she continues to write about candidates and major figures and presidents, everyone from Bill Clinton to Newt Gingrich to George W. Bush. And she even has, I mean, her last political essay really is on Barack Obama. And each time she writes about them, she is kind of thinking about them and what they represent about the culture and how they're how they try to tap into the appetite for entertainment that the American public has developed in each of those eras. She did not write about any president after Obama, as far as I can tell, but you know, you can see how the last 10 years or so of American politics have, you know, are just kind of a natural continuation of this narrative that she saw developing, and how, you know, the initial issue was just that there were cameras pointed at the politicians and they acted differently. But now the cameras are everywhere. We all carry one around in our pocket, and that fundamentally changes how we interact with each other, with politics, with leaders, and we look at them through lenses that we borrow from entertainment, like fandom or going viral or things like that.
And it seems, I mean, she had the opportunity, but it seems like it's a conscious decision that she did not want to write about Donald Trump.
Yeah, well, I assume so. I mean, he's a figure that is around, obviously. Even one of her most famous essays from, you know, a very long time ago, I believe it was published in 91, was about the Central Park Five and the jogger who was assaulted and, you know, badly hurt in Central Park in the late 80s. And that is a place where Trump might have come up.
Right.
Because he, you know, he took out a full page ad in the papers calling for the boys who turned out to be unjustly accused of committing the crime. He called for their for capital punishment for them. And even now he, when asked, does not recant at all. But even there, he's not there in that she's more interested in the way New York as a whole is thinking of itself and the way the media is covering the case and the, what that reveals about New Yorkers. But she also, you know, wasn't very well at the end of her life. And so she wasn't writing much the last 10 or 15 years. So who knows? But it would have been fascinating to read her on Trump. But I think it would have been fascinating to read her on a host of other people and celebrities that we think about all the time. So my hope in writing the book was to kind of pull together some of her thoughts so that we can, you know, move forward and interpret the world through the way that she thought about things.
Given that you're a film critic and given her thoughts on Hollywood, what would she make of the current state of film, the way films are released, the way films are embraced by audiences now?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, you know, she doesn't, when she writes about Hollywood, she's mostly interested in Hollywood culture,
right?
The people who make the films. And I think a thing that is true about, so she was always very aware that film is a sort of a made by committee, right? Every film, even the most auteur driven film, still has to have a whole host of people who sign off on various parts of it and budgets and studios and things like that. And today, there's more films than ever, I can say that definitively, and fewer people watching any of them at any given time than ever. And that actually is very interesting because it means that we fracture off into different stories and different dreams that we tell ourselves. And I think, you know, our entertainment now is driven by things like algorithms and, you know, specialized space. And it's harder and harder to have a mainstream hit, although obviously it happens all the time. As we've seen recently, there have been a couple of big movies in the last month. But I think the formation of the industry increasingly around what an algorithm tells us that people want is quite different from an artist coming in or a writer like her and saying, here's a story we think we want to tell. It just changes the way that we imagine the world around us. And I think that's probably what she would find most significant about it. But again, for her, you know, films were things to be enjoyed, and they were also a really good way for her and her husband to pay the bills. And right. They considered fiction and journalism to be their real work.
This is 100% anecdotal, but I find in my current life that I rely on film critics more than I ever did before. Because there is
some. Well, we love to hear that.
Well, right. I mean, I would imagine you would, and because there's so much out there, it can get buried so quick, and to have someone who actually taps you on the shoulder and say, "This is interesting. This is important. This is something that you should keep an eye out for," is, I think, invaluable because otherwise, so much gets lost.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously, as a critic, I would agree. But even if this wasn't my job, I just think, you know, in any art form, there's so much stuff now. I need people who will maybe tell me I should pay attention to something or who will just write about it, frankly, through their taste. And right. I can decide for myself if I agree. But at least I have a kind of another brain to bounce off of there. And I think otherwise, like, where am I getting my recommendations from? A program somebody wrote? I don't love the idea of that. So I think a critic can help you sift, a critic can help curate, and then a critic also can help you kind of process your thoughts and feelings about something after you experience it. Those are all really valuable ways to make sure that we keep human intelligence in the art and that it doesn't just get ceded to, you know, big corporations that write algorithms, you know, even though that's, of course, something we're always going to have and always going to be dealing with. So I read critics that I don't agree with mostly just because I want to see how other people think about things. And that's something I think we pretty much have lost the art of doing in our culture. And it's exciting to be able to do it.
Alyssa Wilkinson is a film critic at The New York Times and was formerly a senior correspondent and critic at Vox. The name of the new book, We Tell Ourselves Stories, Joan Didion and the American Dream Machine. Alyssa Wilkinson, thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Be well. Again, Alyssa Wilkinson's new book is We Tell Ourselves Stories, Joan Didion and the American Dream Machine. The book is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.